Jay Buxbaum here on behalf of MASC. And MASC has been around for nearly 25 years, addressing the needs of the community in addiction and other challenges that families face throughout the metropolitan and even across the world. And you'd wonder why Jay Buxbaum from Kedem would be promoting MASC. And I'll tell you why, because we're very sensitive here that this is a problem that needs to be addressed, and that drinking responsibly is how you have to do it, if at all. So Jay Buxbaum here telling you that MASC's been around for 25 years almost, addressing 113,000 families over those 25 years. Please, now is the time to donate at maskparents.org. That's maskparents with an S, .org. And if you need help, they are the most wonderful resource to go to, point you in the right direction. Call MASC at 718-758-0400. And don't forget to tune in to the MASC show every Thursday night on Zeb Brenner's WSNR 620 AM. This is Jay Buxbaum on behalf of MASC, that's right, urging you to please donate today to maskparents.org.
Good evening and welcome back to MASC's weekly radio show on Family Matters. MASC, Mothers and Fathers Aligned, saving kids, kids of all ages and all stages for all mental health struggles, including addiction. If you know somebody that needs a referral for a therapist, an inpatient or outpatient program, please give us a call at 718-758-0400. I'll repeat the number. You may want to jot it down for yourself, a loved one, a neighbor, or someone you usually sit next to in shul. Remember, all calls are kept strictly confidential. Our number again, 718-758-0400. MASC still is offering parent support groups by Zoom and in person. So give us a call if you'd like to join. We will send you the link so you can come on and join. We have groups Sunday night for blended families. Yeshaya Krause is the facilitator. Monday night, Dr. Debbie Ackerman. Tuesday night, Dr. Shmuel Brachfeld. Wednesday night, Rabbi Dr. Ben-Zion Tversky. And in person, Dr. Trish Atiya, the first Tuesday of the month. So give us a call, 718-758-0400. And if those nights don't work well for your schedule, there are other organizations offering other groups that we could connect you to. So tonight, I'm very grateful to be able to have on somebody that I've been wanting to have on for a very long time, but don't know how she even has any time to add anything more to her schedule. And that is Sarah Rivka Cohn, who's the founder and director of the Lynx family. I'd like to welcome you on, Sarah Rivka. How are you?
Thank you so much for having me. This is such a treat. And I was just listening to you listing the different groups that you have for parents. And I'm just, as always, blown away by the work of MASC and how detailed you are at servicing each and every client. Even that line at the end where you say, you know, if that night doesn't work for you, you know, we have weird or send you to. And I think that's the gift that MASC gives the world of just being that source of support and help for so many families. So the honor is all mine, and thank you for having me.
Thank you. And yes, I must say that I'm in awe of what Lynx has been doing, accomplishing, and even more so how you have such a fantastic group working for you. I say group instead of employees because I know how devoted your staff is, more personalized with every family that Lynx deals with. So yashar koach to you, to your husband, and all of your staff. Thank you for all you do. So we are going to go right to it. And I'd like our listeners, firstly, to know from you, if you can tell them what Lynx is all about, please.
Wow. Yeah. So Lynx started in 2006. I had lost my mother as a child. I was 9 years old. And somebody had come up to me and said, you know, would you start a publication for teens who lost a parent? And I said, yeah, I would. I was an adult. I was then involved in the marketing and writing world. So this was easy for me. And I went ahead and started a magazine called Lynx Magazine. And as far as I was concerned, this was all it was going to be, to service teen girls who had lost a parent. And then from that magazine, it evolved where these girls sat around my dining room table in January of that year and said, you know, would you make us a weekend? And, you know, I always say I was young and stupid and I had no idea what I was getting myself into in the best possible way. And I said, sure, why not? And that year we had a weekend for about 50 girls and it was the most surreal experience. And I would say that was our turning point in where we began servicing families who've lost a parent on a much more robust form. And really we've grown organically over the years to provide many, many, many services. We've expanded also from going from teen girls to now servicing for the last 10 years, boys as well through Schleimi's Club, our boys division, and then Little Links of Pearls, which is our little girls division. So really by now, any family from 0 to 23 single, we're able to provide as much as we can emotional support through our events, our weekends, therapy referrals, case management, and legal and financial services through our Legally Links group, and really be able to support them in the way, hopefully, that feels, like you said, personalized, and at the same time be able to service many, many, many children. And really, that's kind of in a nutshell what we do.
And that is a big nut to crack. But I do want to say that COVID really, you know, was such a big jump in family, sadly, for you, for so many of us, so many organizations. And as a result, I'm just wondering if you can share what the loss of the difference, experience of loss in when a child loses its mother or father.
Wow. Yeah. So first of all, just to speak to COVID for a moment, I think that the challenge that was COVID was that the helpers were helpless. We were on the same, like dealing with the same crisis level, if you will, than a lot of the families. I remember a point when one of our staff members, one of our case managers, was dealing with a family where the single parent was very, very, very sick. And unbeknownst to the parent who was calling in for help, the case manager was in bed with the exact same form of COVID as she was. So it was challenging. And unfortunately, we got 396 new kids and teens in a span of about 3 months, which was a frightening number. And it was really, it came with a lot of pain. What's interesting there is that I just want to put this out there so that if anyone has experienced this, what we're finding is, couple years later, for a lot of the families, it's now that they're being able to start to process it, only because then, like, the world was so shut and so much help was not available to them on the fly, and there was no regular Shiva and Levias the way they know it, even if it was, you know, somewhat there for some of the families. And so there's kind of this delayed grief action. You were asking me the difference in terms of losing a mother and losing a father. I think that it's very gender dependent, first of all. And I want to just say this to people. Losing a parent, first of all, at any age, but particularly in childhood, is a very difficult experience. And you know, sometimes there'll be these cute little kids who will like debate each other of like what's worse, you know, kind of one-upping. And I often will tell them there's really no like good way for this to happen, and there's no quote unquote better or easier time when it's one parent over the other. I think the struggles are different. I think in most homes, when a mother passes away, we find that we need to hire a lot of outside help sometimes to take over many different tasks within the home, to allow the father to continue to bring parnasa, to allow the father to focus on being the parent. And I always have to explain to men that this doesn't mean that in any way they're less than or that they're not doing a good job. They're doing an amazing job, and I want them to be able to have the emotional capacity to be able to be present for their children and be able to help their children in the right way. So if they need the physical help, no big deal. In terms of losing a father, what I find for some of our families is that often that means, first of all, oftentimes that means losing a tremendous amount of their income. And also oftentimes what that means is losing a certain amount of stability in a home of security. And that could be true for either parent. This is very, very, you know, broad. But in terms of the needs of what we see, we have to fill in terms of the gaps. That's usually what it is. However, when it's a boy who loses his father, or when it's a girl who loses their mother, and school-based events, shul-based events, life cycle events, you know, are so gender specific in our community, right? We have this expectation of a father learning with her son or mother shopping with her daughter. You all of a sudden find that they keenly feel certain parts of their loss in a more, should I say, on a deeper emotional level. And sometimes that's just where the pain is. But I wouldn't say either one is an easier, you know, and I put the word easier right in quotes, just different.
Correct. Different. So I want to bring up something you spoke about, and that is, you know, people are grieving now. They didn't have a chance the right way. There is no right way, but we do the right way of sitting Shiva and people visiting and being Menachem Avol. That was a big loss to many families during COVID. And there are myths about, you know, people and their grieving, you know, years later. People may look at them and say, what are you talking about? That happened so many years ago. Like, you know, didn't you get help, whatever? Please speak about how that can come up, even at times now of parents losing parents in times of war or every day, just sudden, you know, so PTSD kicks in there.
Oh, yeah.
So I'd like you to speak about that for a moment, please.
Yeah, I once had somebody who called me out and said, you know, I always say that the grief lasts forever. And he said, what do you mean? The Torah has rules of how we grieve, when we grieve and stuff like that. And I had a great conversation with a rabbi at the time. And really, I think that there's a difference between mourning and grief. We do have prescriptive mourning, right? A person can't decide 4 years later of today I want to sit Shiva. Today I want to rice Kriya. It doesn't work like that. We do have halachas and we do have times. However, we have so many proofs within the Torah that grief itself lasts forever. And I'll give you just the most basic of the examples is that the Torah doesn't say that you can hurt a yasam many years later. The Torah says, right, we need to be careful with the feelings of an almana and a yasam, and it doesn't give a time constraint. Why? B'hayaki yitzek alai, right? At the end of the day, this person is in pain and he will cry out to me. So we understand, and that's something that is a huge myth in this world sometimes, because people have this idea of the five stages of grief being very linear and people reach this end called acceptance and then all is good. There's a tremendous myth that it has a beginning, a middle, and an end that's very defined, and that's not true. Grief mostly comes in waves, and delayed grief often is either because a person could not have, you know, they weren't survival. Think about anybody who went through the Holocaust. Think about anybody going through the war or, you know, any type of experience like that, where at the end of the day, there's no chance to sit down and breathe and grieve. Grieving is a luxury to some degree. You have to be able to have that safe space to be able to do it. And if you don't have that, then sometimes you just ha ha ha. And then at some point when that body and that mind gets a chance to breathe, it all of a sudden begins to feel every part of the trauma and the loss and the grief. But there's another reason for delayed grief, and that is age. You know, a child's mind may not be developed enough to be able to really experience and understand what grief is until they are older. Typically, when little children lose a parent, we often see them going through that delayed grief process somewhere between the ages of 15 and 20. So that's just a fact that people may be interested in.
Absolutely. We get that a lot on our helpline where people call about a child, a teenager that suddenly is acting out. Mm-hmm. And by doing the intake and going backwards, the parent or loved one may have died and they were a very young age. So we do explain that this could be them beginning to grieve at their stage for their age. I'd like to also ask you, you know, people want to help, and not every griever, you know, want the same thing. Neighbors, friends, family, everybody wants to help when somebody's grieving. So, you know, what would you suggest to the helpers, to the family members, friends, classmates? I know it's a big question, a wide question, but what would you say is the best way to be there for your friend, your family member, or your loved one that is grieving?
So I think it is a big question, but one of the things that I realized a couple of years ago is that, you know, there's this famous concept of the five love languages. And what basically that distills is that different people feel better in different ways, feel loved in different ways, feel given to in different ways. And I tell people to think about a simcha, right? Is there that friend who it matters who shows up, or does it matter to them more that they got this gorgeous gift for their simcha or a beautiful chocolate platter or something like that? Think about the general way that this person gives to others and enjoys receiving from others, and use that in the grief field as well. So for instance, let's say somebody loves gifts and stuff of that sort, or loves being acknowledged in that way, then recognizing the yard site with a card, sending over a little something, whether it's a blanket or a little candle or something that is helpful to them in some form, can sometimes be a terrific way of connecting and showing that person that you're there with them. If somebody really appreciates the quality time, then going out for lunch with them and hearing and creating a space to listen to their pain, right? If somebody is the kind of person who has these different needs, then you need to find a way that is true for them. The one thing that is true is that there's no one size fits all. I also will say that often as a community, we're very good at rallying in the beginning. And one of the things we always say at Links and Shlemus Club is that we really, really try our best to be there for the long run. And, you know, in all three of our divisions, the girls division, which is Zisel's Links, a very special division, the boys division, Shlemi's Club, the little girls division, Little Links of Pearls, each division has its own way that we try to be there in the long haul for the families, because we find that so many of our families, you know, I'll never forget a quick thing is that somebody said, you know, when during that first couple of years, somebody built their sukkah. But 6 years later, she said, you know, my father didn't come back from the dead, but nobody's building our sukkah anymore. So I think that there's just something that we need to acknowledge is that grief is a long run process, and that we need to be there for the long run for our friends and our families.
Absolutely. You know, I remember a couple years ago, you started groups for adult men and women who lost a parent. What was the impetus behind that?
So the impetus behind that was that we were doing a lot of, whether it was on social media or other places, where people started hearing about our work. And I think it was actually during COVID, and people were like, oh, Chabal, I wish this was there for me when I was a kid, or I just lost my parent now and I'm 42 and I don't know any of these things, or I need support during my grief process. And we asked around and didn't find that there were enough groups for this age or this type of loss. And so what we did at the time was we started groups, and we really thought it was going to be a one-time thing, and it's been continuing. We're actually sending out our group invite soon. But the idea is that they meet for 6 months, usually twice a month, and they really create a tremendous camaraderie. And it's kind of our way of saying loss is loss, no matter the age, no matter the stage. And we also created an adult grievers newsletter and an adult grievers summit, because again, adults who grieve, you know, deserve the support as well.
Absolutely. Thank you. Let's go now to, you know, go back to the helpers and your staff. You always encourage self-care. What are you doing for your staff now since COVID with self-care, and also now around the war? So many families have relatives that are in Israel, frightened, and can be reacting. Some of your clients being scared that they already lost a loved one. So tell us about what you're doing in these areas today, please.
So I wish I was doing more, and there's so much more to be done. I really feel passionately that helpers need to be supported in every bit. And as a community, we really need to make sure that happens, because there's, first of all, there's burnout, but second of all, there's also just the inability to give to the level that we're being asked sometimes to help and support and be there emotionally if we don't have that capacity. So now we do have built-in supervision, which definitely is a phenomenal tool. But then we also like to do fun stuff, whether it was last week we did this floral arrangement, just activity together, just something that takes us away from the work that we do, away from the heaviness. We try to have some fun together in different ways. And again, not as often as I would like, but, you know, even if we do this every couple months, but the ability and the encouragement that we try to give each other of like, go have fun, do something light, so that you can step away in order to come back and give from a stronger, better place.
Which is wonderful. So Rivka, I'm going to be very blunt and ask you, what are you doing for your self-care? And what is the most difficult part of the work for you personally, please share?
So I think for me, I'll start with the second question first, and then I guess I'll tell you a little bit more about my self-care. But in terms of the most difficult part for me, I think is the fact that there are some situations that we need to acknowledge, and I'm sure you'll relate to this, that there's very little, if anything, we can do. We pride ourselves in really trying to come up with a solution to many different situations, but sometimes either because of a family dynamic, which sometimes doesn't allow for the help to come in. Sometimes there are certain problems that are just not fixable, and all we can do, so to speak, is companion the bereaved and just sit there with the person and hold their pain with them. But there's very little that we can, quote unquote, do. And I think that, you know, it's a very, very difficult feeling for someone who likes to help and to understand that not everything is helpable. And that's difficult. In terms of my own self-care, I'm very open about the fact that for me, you know, therapy is a big piece of the puzzle. Constant supervision. And in the summer, I created something called Camp Runaway with two friends, which was a lifesaver for me. Once a week, we really acted like we were in camp, and we just had a great time, and we went on trips and we explored places. I've been known to do these little day trips on my own or with friends. And I really have to say that it took hitting a tremendous low, probably during COVID, and realizing that I didn't know where to find any more reservoirs of energy in me. And I was determined to find it again. And then I realized that I can't wait for that gas tank to go to like cranking levels. It's got to be kept full at all times. And so it became a much bigger priority for me.
Wonderful. But I'm waiting for my invite to join you, because we at Mask run low on our gas tanks, and self-care is very, very important. Love to join you anytime. So let me ask you, what about the horrific situation now in Israel? You want to share how possibly your work changed in the last few weeks?
Yeah, so for me, it was a very weird experience. I had been in Eretz Yisrael for Sukkos. We made bar mitzvah actually, and then obviously we're there when this horrific tragedy and horrific situation broke out. And it's changed me in the sense of having been there and seen certain things up front. It kind of made me very passionate about doing whatever we can to support our families who live there. These are families who have experienced loss before and who are there and deserve whatever supports we can give them. We don't have a perfect system out yet, but we definitely want to be doing as many check-ins as we can and as much support. We also had planned before this for a weekend in Israel that we do for our boys who are learning there or our English-speaking boys who live there, Bahrim. So this is ages like 16 to 23. And somebody came to me and said, "Well, you're not doing it now." And I said, "If not now, when?" And so my very, very brave and fantastic staff is flying out in a couple of weeks, Eretz Hashem, back to Eretz Yisrael and being there to support these Bachrim, because why not? Now is the time where we need to step up and we need to be there and we need to just show them that we're there to support them. And like you said, there's a lot of fear for some of them. Some of them, the trauma has taken away all fear, but for some of them, there's a lot of concern, a lot of anxiety, and being able to be there in some form, hopefully, can be of chizuk and of help.
And Links is a family. Once somebody becomes a member with Links, they really do feel that they belong to a Links family. So you sending your staff to them, it would be really family coming to see them. So I'm just going to ask you, I'm sure it's hard to pick your favorite, but what's your favorite program at Link's Family?
It is a hard one. But if I had
I hope nobody's listening from Link's because they're going to be jealous.
it is a hard one, but I think we would probably all hands-on agree that what we did with our case management division has probably been the greatest game changer. What basically used to happen is that families called and they had to speak to this one about their legal services, that one for their therapy, the next one to make an appointment and address me. And really, each program is incredible, but nobody was pulling it together for this one family. Today, because there are case managers in place that get assigned to a family, they don't have to repeat their story 10 times. These case managers will walk the family through whatever process. So even if they can't do the actual legal help or the dress me appointment or stuff like that, they are there to assist them with that, which makes it a whole, it's a game changer for the families. And it's something that we're constantly expanding and trying to expand our that division, because each case manager right now is holding a lot more families than is probably physically possible. But we definitely try that, and I think that I have to say that it's been a game changer for all departments. So nobody be jealous. You're all doing amazing, and this was just the catalyst to be able to tie it all together.
They really are doing amazing. Kol hakavod to School of Mitzvah. Thank you, Sarifka. We're running out of time. Hope to have you on again soon, but I am waiting for the phone to ring to get invited to your camp, the self-care.
And thank you again, Rachel, for all your avodas HaKadosh at Mask, and thank you for having me on your show.
Thank you. And I want to wish everyone a very good evening, a beautiful Shabbos, and always remember, hang in, hold on, and still virtually hug tight. Tonight's show is in honor of all the chayalim and chayalot. Please go online and donate to maskparents.org so we can continue with all our shows. Thank you, and have a good night.
Do you own an annuity, either fixed rate, indexed, or variable? Are you paying high fees and getting low returns? If so, Annuity General would like you to have this free book to learn the pitfalls and mistakes of buying an annuity. The Annuity Do's and Don'ts for Baby Boomers contains the little-known truths about annuities, like how to help reduce your fees and increase retirement income. And it's free. That's right, free. As a bonus, we'll also throw in a free annuity rate report just for calling. We researched over 1,000 annuities and summarized rates and benefits from financially strong insurers. You get Annuity Do's and Don'ts for Baby Boomers and the Annuity Rate Report, both absolutely free for calling Annuity General today. Hurry, supplies are limited. Call now.
800-941-4052. 800-941-4052. 800-941-4052. That's 800-941-4052.
You are listening to
Talkline Network Radio, America's longest-running Jewish broadcast network, the voice of the Jewish community.